My personal opinion is that I really would like to, if at all possible, I want to hit the application in, well, you could characterize this as an example or a form of hacking naked, right? You know, the phrase that's used for Security Weekly. So I don't want any filtering to encumber my test. Now, some would say that's cheating, right? Hey, can you turn off the web application firewall when my pen test requests are coming in? That is totally cheating, isn't it? Yeah, that makes me cooler. Except, what is the goal of the pen test? Yeah, we want to show vulnerabilities. We're not stunt hackers here, right? It's not an ego trip showing about how cool I am, right? And it's to express the flaws, express the risk. Just because I can't bypass your filter in the time-limited engagement window that you've given me, and I move on because I've got a limited time, and I got to find something, right, that's reportable. Okay? Just because I can't bypass your filter, or I don't know how to bypass your filter today, does that mean an adversary doesn't? No. They're going to spend more time on it. They're going to grind on it harder than I'm willing to, harder than I'm allowed to, probably. So, to me, the way I approach it is I want to find your flaws. Now, if I'm required to give you a grade, a thumbs up, thumbs down, letter grade, number grade, assess your risk, if that's a requirement, for some people it is, right? I don't love it, but for some people they want, am I a D minus, right? No, you're an F plus, yeah. I don't love that personally, because to me, that is not my job. That is your risk management team's job, to assess the risk. I'm going to tell you what I think the high impact flaws are, what I was able to weaponize, but this is not a full-on assessment of your overall risk, in my opinion. I'm finding flaws. I'm trying to help triage and prioritize. That's my vantage point. But if they really want that, can you tell me if I passed? Can you tell me if I failed? Can you give me the... Well, then they're going to push back on any sort of reducing their security, right? Because it's going to make them look worse, isn't it? But to me, the goal is not to pass a test, right? You're not pen testing to the test, right? You're not teaching to the test. Your goal as a client is not to pass the test. Your goal is to be more secure. So you limiting what I see and vulnerabilities that I discover, to me, that does you a disservice. Yeah, you might look better on my test, but you might increase the likelihood that you get popped too. So that's controversial, right? That view, that idea, that is not the standard party line for most pen testing and most clients. It's a discussion that we have, right? And not all of them will agree to this, and not all of them will give me credentials for their applications either, right? Because again, that's going to make you look worse. But I don't do black box pen testing, so if you want to hire me, I'm not doing that, right? You're going to give me credentials if you want it to be an app pen test, because it ain't really an app pen test if you're not going to let me get into the app and you're not going to let me attack other users, like legit users. So I have a different tack, but my goal is to help you understand your weaknesses with the goal of them not being as weak after I leave, right, or after you attend to them, right? So that's the way that I approach it. Yes, sir. My preference regarding, you know, turning off security, turning on security, my preference is I want it to be as unlimited as possible, right? Well, that's a bad way of characterizing it. On a recording, I'm not going to say, I want you to lift your skirts to me. That just sounds a little wrong, right? I want to see the unfiltered truth, and yeah, I want to see the man behind the curtain. That's less risque. So I want to see the unfiltered truth. I want to see those flaws, and that's what I want to present with. Now, if you really want me to assess and give you a letter grade, and you say, hey, listen, I know that's cute that you were able to launch this proof of concept and it popped on your browser, but for all of our enterprises browsers, that's not going to happen because they do have built-in cross-site scripting filters. To me, I don't care, right? Because that's not the point. The point is not that your browser caught it. The point is that you've got the flaw, right? But if that's really an issue, my stance is, all right, well, then you explain, right, in your response why that's a mitigating factor, right? I don't personally care. Like, if you think that's a significant mitigating factor, that's totally fine. It doesn't bother me one way or another. Now, if I have to give you a grade, I would submit, yeah, that is a mitigating factor, but the flaw remains, right? The flaw remains. So this is touchy. It's touchy, and it's a long conversation that needs to happen, and it's a lot of expectation setting, but that's just the way that I try to approach them. Exactly. It's mitigation versus remediation. The flaw is still there. There are mitigating factors that make it so it perhaps is less likely to get popped, but it doesn't mean the flaw doesn't exist. But if I was filtering at the beginning, I might not ever find the flaw in the first place, and I might not know that that is a mitigating factor. Does that make sense? Oh, I see a lot of success because I just don't take clients that aren't nice to me, right? But I can be pretty discriminating because I don't have, like, I'm just responsible for the mouths I got to feed. I ain't got no employees or anybody like that. So I can just say, no, I got a lot of other work that they're nicer people to work with, right? Well, most pen tests that we get are really checkbox pen tests, right? I want to check a box that somebody told me I had to check. And that's really, that's what they want. Well, you don't want me doing your pen test then. You want just whatever is going to charge you like per IP to give you like a Qualys scan. I'm not saying anything negative about Qualys, but a vulnerability scan is not a pen test, right? But I'm not going to be nearly as cheap as somebody that's going to like cover their eyes, push a button and say, here's your report, right? There's no way, shape or form, but you're going to look a hell of a lot better under that microscope than mine, right? That's my expectation. So a lot of this is, The clients that I work with, they're not looking for that because I'm not going to work with those clients. But yes, right, point taken. And your organization could very well be the one that just, you have checkbox seeking behavior. And that's totally fine. Just understand that you don't really want a pen test. You want a box to get checked. So do it as cheaply as freaking possible to get that box checked and then prioritize dollars for doing actual security. Because the checking of the box probably is not, right? Yes, sir. And I know this is totally controversial, and I'm sorry for that. Right? Yes, sir.
We've been working to try and let the programs allow us to scan it with and without their web application firewall.
Nice.
So they can say, yeah, like this is a package. We can't go fix it.
Right.
We mitigate it.
Yep.
And we say, okay, we agree. That's valid.
Yeah.
We know what it looks like underneath.
Exactly. Mitigation is totally legit. Web app firewall can mitigate. And you know, you might not fix the flaw and you might implement better mitigation. And that's totally legit, right? That's totally legit. So I think it's a preferred approach. And I am seeing some organizations come around to that, but it's after usually that they've gotten terrible, terrible zero value from pen tests that they've acquired in the past. And then they say, hey, let's have a relationship with a shop that's going to do this, right? And you're going to pay more for that, or you're going to get less time or something because, you know, you're not just a, you know, pen test. Yeah. Pen test puppy meal. That's the exact phrase I was looking for. Right. All right. Yeah. Trust. So I know I totally just stepped up on a soapbox and I apologize for that. But does it make sense kind of the thought process that goes into it? Because we want to find the flaws so that we can help you understand how to get better at security. So filter bypass, to me, that's not something that I want to emphasize. That's, to me, I don't feel like you're going to get a significant return on the investment of my time trying to do filter bypass. Maybe that's after we've already figured out that the flaw exists, and then you mitigate, and then we test, you know, for some filter bypass. But you know, that's a later stage conversation. Browser false negatives, though, are absolutely something we cannot abide. We must make sure that we're using a browser that we can either disable the security, or that is a browser that doesn't have the security to begin with. Most importantly for us, Firefox does not have a built-in cross-site scripting filter. It was on their roadmap for a while, and then it just got taken away. The way that they think that cross-site scripting should be mitigated is through content security policy, which is awesome, and I totally agree, but it's dependent upon people changing the way that the applications are presented and browsers honoring that. And the overwhelming majority of applications do not. It's like less than 5% or something. Yeah, probably even lower than that. So, bypass browser filters. I think we're good. We get this. Yeah. That's, to me, not the goal of the test, is bypassing browser filters. Yes, absolutely. If they have that checkbox seeking behavior, then they're going to freak out when you give them a proof of concept. You show that it works. You demonstrate that it works. They try it on their system. It doesn't work. They say it's a false negative. You say, oh, no, you just need an older, weaker browser. And they say, no. Okay. Oh, wait, do I have to go on? Yeah. So that's just understand that you are going to get pushback, right? You're going to get pushback when you're intentionally using a browser that doesn't include that security and you tell them about this flaw and they try to replicate this flaw and don't see it. Then, you know, you need to go ahead and front load with some caveats there that says, hey, listen, you know, the browsers might change this behavior and yes, this flaw exists, blah, 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 right? Yes, sir. Yep. So older browsers, less secure browsers that, you know, might be more vulnerable to these. Are those common users? Are those commonly clients to your applications? Public facing, they're more likely to be. Internally, you know, I think that browser security is a much more significant mitigating factor, right? Because you have better control, hopefully, of the browsers that you present with from your internal network. So you would expect that these are more likely to be secure, hopefully. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Could be. Yeah, it totally could be, right? You could absolutely have a bunch of old busted browsers. I think I mentioned earlier that I haven't gone a year of my career without seeing Windows NT in an organization. So, you know, I haven't seen one in 2016, but I also haven't been on many engagements in 2016. So jury's still out. Maybe this will be the year, right? Sure. Nice. How about whitelisting and making all the targets a trusted domain, right? All the targets, all these sites, a trusted domain. So that should decrease the security level, right? I haven't paid enough attention to IE to know if that turns off all of the cross-site scripting filtering. It certainly might, or Edge rather, because IE is going the way of the dodo. But yeah, that might be a way of trying to present with a browser that's not going to get in your way, is by setting it up as a trusted site. Yeah, that could work well. So we've done our reflection test. We've done our filter test. Now we move on to proof of concept payloads. So unfortunately, this is where most tools and most testers start, is by just like sending some alert boxes and seeing if they come back. That's not as effective as you might think. And a lot of this is because, well, that reflection, that filtering, right? We need to be cognizant of where we're landing. We need to be cognizant of what may or may not be filtered out. So, but we're now ready for the attack, kind of proof of concept payloads. And initially, it might just be simple little alert boxes as a test, but there are tons and tons of different cross-site scripting attack payloads. FuzzDB has some, JBO Fuzz. Burp Zap, and I mentioned this one, XSSR. Even though I don't use that tool actively, there's a pretty decent little list that was compiled of cross-site scripting payloads that don't seem to pop up on a lot of the other lists. So, you know, you might get a little bit more traction with some of those. Okay. obviously, be careful and look at what you're sending. It's usually not as scary with cross-site scripting as it is with like OS command injection, or SQL injection, or LDAP injection. You know, those usually are more likely to cause harm than these. Okay. All right. We're going to have an exercise now with HTML injection, which might sound to you like this is something completely different. But in truth, cross-site scripting is really just a narrow type of HTML injection. It's injecting scripts as opposed to just injecting general content. So we're going to see HTML injection where you're injecting something that is not a script at all. You also see injecting images. Now, I know this seems kind of weird, like, really? Oh my gosh, you injected an image. Why? Who cares? But I can't tell you, and this is a bit laughable, but some of the most successful proof of concept, cross-site scripting proof of concept that I've ever had is presenting a picture of the organization's webpage with their competitor's logo on the page, or showing a redirect to competitor site. You talk about like gut punch to executives. They see that, they're like, wait, what the hell just happened there? Is that gone? Did you put that there? Right, they're freaking out because they think you've defaced their site. It's like, nope, that's just what all of your users are gonna see, all of your customers are gonna see. Wait, what? Yeah, if this flaw gets exploited, it's like, what? Yeah, that's a little bit better than ping, yeah? So image injection can actually be very, very powerful, very powerful. Because you can change the messaging on the site. One of the most well-known examples of cross-site scripting was a cross-site scripting flaw on CNN's weather site, the weather portion of CNN. Some of you might even remember this. It was an image injection, right? Not real scripting, but it was an image injection. They injected an image, and it was like one of those, you know, pictures. Do you remember the movie like The Day After Tomorrow? It had like the super storm that covers the entire universe. Okay, maybe the globe. But it was like this picture of just ungodly tornado, hurricane, right? Just covering like the whole globe. And it blew it up. And then the caption they put in supersized font, and it said, all Florida residents are going to die. And that was presented as like as if it was a CNN weather headline. And that's needless to say, got a lot of press and a lot of repeats. So images can be very, very powerful. You're changing the messaging on their site, and that can really rub people the wrong way in a way that's impactful, right? But also kind of harmless too. Yeah. You're not doing anything to their client. You're just changing what they see. So, that can be useful. So we'll see some basic little HTML injection, some image injection using HTML to do a simple redirect. Okay, and then we'll move into some more cross-site scripting specific stuff. So the piece of Matilda you're going to use for this guy is OWASP 2013, cross-site scripting, persistent second order. So it's got this little add to your blog portion. Okay, and if things get crazy and you can't navigate because you've dropped too many pop-up boxes everywhere in the world, then don't forget the reset DB. Okay, if you cannot load, you can't type anything because you've just messed everything up, reset DB is your friend. So here are your challenges. Here's your no hints version. The following injections: an HTML H1 tag, HTML image tag, image injection. Then use an iframe, inject an iframe to inject the blog within itself, right? So it's turtles all the way down, right? So it's like the mirrors looking into each other. You're going to inject the blog into itself. So you're going to render it. It's going to render itself, which is going to render it, which is going to render itself ad infinitum, right? Which is kind of awesome. and then you're going to do some cross-site scripting. So do exploits to pop up a string. You're going to do exploits so that when someone views the log, this is that admin, stored admin, they view the log, they're going to have a pop-up. Okay, now view the log, you're going to send a pop-up with their cookie. Okay, and of course you could, rather than popping up the cookie, you could steal the cookie with cookie catcher. All right? So have fun, play with your little HTML injection. You can do this on the no hints version. You can also walk through and see the images that we're going to use and the tags that we're going to use, which is fun. Let's have a look at least at a few elements of this. We characterize this as HTML injection. Yeah, we'll do some cross-site scripting as well. But we've got this little blog here, and this is going to allow us to add in whatever HTML we want. So we said your first thing was a little H1 tag. Hi, Seth. Right, a little H1 tag. And save, and then we can see, hi, Seth. Oh, it's big and bold. Yay. That is not cool at all. That is totally lame. Right? That's lame, but it's a means to an end. It's showing that, hey, if we can do this, then we could probably do some other stuff. So we said, hey, let's do, what was your next one? Was it image? Let's do image source. Hey, image source equals, what do we got? HB7001, and it's urch.jpg. All right. Okay. So this is our little image injection. That's a little largish. It's a little large, but you got to see it in its full glory. So it's actual size. Yeah. you might have to make things a little small. Yeah. Did you see the commentary underneath it? I love this. Eric totally put this in there. If you think that the marble is inverted, if you think that it's upside down, you're clearly not an astronaut. There's no up in space. Yeah. I just think that's funny. Very, very well-known image, and I'm going to reset so I don't have to keep it at jumbo mode. excuse me. Reset. Thank you. All right. Hopefully you remember the reset button and you didn't have to contend with that giant marble in your face. All right, so what else are we going to do? We've got, injecting the blog within the blog. This one's fun. I'm going to copy this because I always typo this one. Okay. So that's what we're doing, iframe source, and we're putting it to itself just because we think that'd be clever and fun. So let's see what happens. Oh, wait, what happened? Well, what if I go down in here? Things get ugly. Maybe I can navigate in here. All right. So yeah, that's just kind of funny. How about, and now we're going to start getting a bit more insidious. We've got, what's next? Redirection. So let's do, I turned on hints. I forgot. My bad. I clicked the hints in the embedded injected iframe, the blog within blog, so I accidentally turned on hints for myself. No, thank you. No, thank you. So what do we got? We got scripts, and then we're doing window.location to somewhere. Window.location equals HTTP 127.001, and that's, of course, on our box. sans.org/account. So I think this one's kind of fun. I mean, think about the potential of weaponizing this for phishing purposes. Hey, look, it's Sans Institute. It works. Oh, I guess I better put in my portal account. Now, if you look at the address bar, it's clearly not. Okay, we're gonna get more evil with it. Hold on. So, you can take a picture of this, or I'll send it to you somehow later. This is a fun one. It was just a bit much for you to type. So let's get a bit more evil with it. Let's make it actually an iframe, and let's take over the entire page's content. So it's a bit ugly. What we're doing here is I'm setting up some CSS. Called style 11, and I'm saying the position is fixed, and we're setting up borders and saying, sorry, there ain't no border. I want 100% width, 100% height, no border, no margin, no padding. And this is one that a lot of people forget, and I always want to do this backwards. CSS, z index is like, how close to you is it? right? So the bigger the number, right, the closer it is to you. So that's the CSS, that's the setup. And then I've got an iframe that uses that CSS, and the iframe is, well, that exact same thing, right? That exact same source, and no frame border, no scrolling. So let's see what this looks like. I think this one's fun. Okay? Except look where you are. So imagine if this were actually sans.org that had a cross-site scripting flaw that allowed this. This is now the iframe, right? But it doesn't look so much like the iframe, does it? So, you know, I could take this, I could, you know, could spider Mutilde and then put it on there, and you'd actually be interfacing with my iframe, right? So, you know, you can interact with it. But, you know, I didn't redirect you to 127. I just took over everything. So let's scroll down. Oh, look, you can't really scroll down because the scroll is actually scrolling Mutilde, which is behind this, which you can't see, right? Isn't that kind of awesome? I think that's kind of awesome. So I think if you get it small enough, you can start to see a little bit of stuff underneath it. I think that's kind of fun. So that looks kind of scary. So yes. Exactly. I just frame busted and took over the entirety of the screen. And so now it's an overlay of the entire thing. There's no border. And I didn't put the little scroll bar on it because if the size wasn't right, then you could scroll and you could see what's behind it. So I make it so you can't scroll it at all. It just takes over the whole screen. There's no border. There's no scrolling. The scroll bar that you see is actually Mutilde, right? So it doesn't move you. Yeah, you can interact with it, okay? So now, because the iframe is actually, you're actually hitting a mirror of that site that I've got loaded up. So it's, you know, now it's not a full-on mirror. It's not something that you can, you know, we didn't go too far down this rabbit hole. But, you know, you could totally submit some data in here, and I could tell it where to go that is somewhere that you don't think it's supposed to go. I just think that's kind of awesome personally. And that one you have to demonstrate live, because you just show them and it says, hey, here's your site, except it ain't your site, and they just don't buy it, right? They just don't believe you. So you have to kind of demonstrate that one a bit further. So I think that was fun, and I can put this on the screen later for you to take a picture of, or I can, you know, send it to you somehow. It's nothing special. It isn't. It's just using CSS and then changing the way that this iframe is actually loaded up. But their flaw is that they allow me to inject HTML, right? That's their flaw. So, but you could probably come up with some use cases where that would be much scarier to an organization than would be just, you know, some simple JavaScript. You know, this phishing from their own site, you find a cross-site scripting flaw, and now you can phish them, and the address bar shows their site. That's pretty insidious. Yeah, that's pretty nasty. All right. So the other piece, you've already done cross-site scripting. Go back. Go away. You've already done cross-site scripting. Yes, we can do this as a stored cross-site scripting attack. Okay, we do it as a stored cross-site scripting attack. You know, alert 42 script. All right, so we can do that. That's fine. Now, whenever we load this up, it's going to pop up every single time we load it up. Right, so it's going to render. Oh, I accidentally just submitted it again. whoops. So reset DB is your friend. But we also then talk about this view log. So view log, it shows you in the page what the browser's user agent is. It shows you host name. It shows you the page viewed, right? And So user visited, add to your blog. User visited this. Okay. So we could attempt it with our browser user agent. Okay? We could change our user agent and try the script there. We can also do it with a page. And, you know, then we can just do the same thing that we've done already. Okay. That's not going to go anywhere, but that's not what we're trying to do. We're just trying to target the admin. So when they view log, here we go. Here's the script running, right? And we can do the same thing to do their little cookie redirection. So you can copy that little cross-site scripting payload that you used in the phpMyAdmin and slap it in there, just the payload portion of it, not the lang equal and all that stuff. But everything after equal, you could do that and try to steal their cookies. Cool? All right. Any questions? So we've played a bit with our kind of basic discovery, proof of concept, cross-site scripting. So a little bit of fuzzing for how to find. Stored is more difficult, and it really requires not a little one-off fuzzer, but a more comprehensive, where you're doing injections all over the place and then looking for them. And it's harder to detect in an automated way. You can still do it, but they're a little bit harder to fuzz for instance, because you gotta kind of follow up and hit a bunch of sites after you've done injection everywhere, and then you gotta determine where it came from. So in truth, that's better suited to web app vulnerability scanners than fuzzing, right? Just because it's got to be a lot of places. So let's say you found your cross-site scripting flaw, and now you want to exploit it. So what do we do with exploitation? Well, you've seen some stuff. We've already shown you a little bit. You could do HTML injection. You could do image injection. You could do iframes. You can also, of course, do pop-ups. But let's do some interesting things with it. Now, one aside before we get going too far is, you know, what we've done. What we've done largely from a reflection standpoint has all been gets. And that's easy to consider how you would weaponize that. If it's all just a get and it's on the URL, I can copy that URL and you can see how you could get someone to actually submit this, right? I send you a link. There you go. Well, how do you do that with post? Well, with post, you need them to actually, you know, submit more data, and you can't just give them a URL to click and have it send a post. So what we've got here, this is some code that Mark Baggett did, and there's a number of tools that do this, but this is Mark's get2post.py, and Mark Baggett created this. It's on his GitHub. It's also on your VM, and it tries to help us out with taking a post and then turning it into a get. So it requires us to have a server and where we're going to host this, and it allows us to create a link that we then give to people. They click the link, it comes to our page and then post, right? So it's trying to make it so that we can still, you know, more easily weaponize or show someone how this could be weaponized, but we do need an accessible server where we can host this, all right? So just a little aside there if you want to play with that, but it is on your VM, and it's also on GitHub. So typical things that we do. The most well known is cookie theft, right? Reading people's cookies. Other big ones though are sending users different places, sending them to a place that they're not supposed to go, sending them to a place that we control, sending their browser to a phishing site, sending their browser to a site where we can try to give them more substantial exploits. And we saw the modifying content on a page. Really, what can we do? It's limited to, in some respects, our knowledge of JavaScript. And there could be additional limitations, but JavaScript, of course, can do just tremendous things. We saw reading cookies. Just a simple little document.cookie is sufficient most of the time. And send that to a site we control. with a cookie catcher, without a cookie catcher, with an extra evil cookie catcher. You saw how we could see it even with something as lame as simple HTTP server, right? You don't need anything crazy substantial. You don't need a cookie catcher to pull this off. But that can be useful. And there are others that are more substantial, that were built more for exploitation and automated exploitation. But I'm a little leery of using those. Okay. Redirecting users is impactful, and it's something that organizations can care about. How about if I make it so that users are automatically redirected to your competitor site? How about if I make it so that your users are automatically redirected to porn, since we've already, you know, dropped that bomb today? So we'll send them to somewhere nefarious. We'll send them to somewhere that you don't want users to think that your organization is sending them, right? That's really all that we're talking about here. But it could be also redirecting them to a place that we host. So a place we host so we can do more substantial things to them, so that we can attempt to perform client-side exploitation against them, right? And we'll talk about how we can pull that off in a bit. A lot of our big, gnarly exploitation, it's not going to be simple little tiny script. It's going to be something pretty substantial. So lots and lots of lines of code, perhaps. We will need to likely host these somewhere else. There might be a limitation on the number of characters you can submit. And we can host these, slap them up on our evil site. And we talked already about the external scripts and script sources not being a violation of same origin policy, right? We inject that reference to an external script on the page. We host it. It reaches out, grabs this. It's considered to be part of that same origin, right? And runs. Now, on the evasion side, I told you already, we don't really get into this. Invasion often will just be coming up with encoded versions of our payloads. Slightly obfuscated to bypass filters, trying to use cross-site scripting payloads that lack the filtered characters. So there's lots of obfuscators. We've got the little, it's classic now, but it's the RSnake's original cross-site scripting obfuscation, right? It's now, he's no longer hosting it because he's no longer doing much, but he donated it to OWASP. So OWASP is actually maintaining the cross-site scripting filter bypass cheat sheet and adding to it. So you can check that, but really it's largely about trying to encode to get the bad characters out, because most of them are blacklist, and or trying to do something that trying to use something that isn't going to look as overtly like JavaScript. Sometimes you will find that you don't need to do much of this at all, because you don't need these characters at all, because where you're dropping is inside of existing JavaScript, which is just kind of awesome. Because then you don't need a script tag at all. You just put in raw JavaScript code and it will work. I'm not going to go through all these guys. Some of them are a bit goofy. One thing that's challenging is that your browsers are accepting of insanity. They expect that people are going to have poorly coded web applications. They expect people are going to have non-conforming, non-standard implementations, and they are very accommodating. They will look at your busted code and say, I think I know what you meant there. So things like these malformed image tags, there's no way that stuff should work, right? And it just depends on which browser is on the other end, whether it will actually work. So there's a lot of nuance here. And again, I told you kind of my stance on the filter bypass stuff. It's just, to me, that's not part and parcel to a pen test. It's just not. But it is something to know that this is a possibility. And I would submit that if you need to convince an organization, you know, perhaps just look at CVEs associated with cross-site scripting filters being bypassed all the time in browsers, right? So a tweak, an update to take care of that edge case bypass. So just be mindful of those sorts of issues. But encoding is a common way of trying to get around. All right. The most beautiful way to do our cross-site scripting exploitation is with BEEF. Now, BEEF is, for us, a great, great demo tool. It's for showing the impact or the potential impact of cross-site scripting. It works pretty well on that front. It also can be used just in a lab to, you can use it in a lab setting to learn about different techniques. For instance, I'll run it and look at new BEEF modules, and I'll run it through a proxy so that I can actually see what BEEF is sending back to make these things happen and how it's actually doing its causing its impact. And so that can be a useful way. Even if you're not going to use BEEF directly, you can use it as a way to see how to achieve those same ends on your own with a simple one-off script inject. But BEEF, Browser Exploitation Framework, it was originally written by Wade Alcorn, and it's a very popular tool that tries to make it easier to perform cross-site scripting, easier to maintain compromised or cross-site scripted systems, and easier to keep attacking them. So when you think of like the alert pop-up, when you think of those sorts of things, it's really just one-off. That's what we think about, right? You know, let me do my one thing. Well, it'd be a heck of a lot cooler if you could just continually do one thing after another, after another, after another. And BEEF allows that. And it allows you to drop in arbitrary JavaScript. The BEEF is written in Ruby. It used to be written in pure PHP. My belief, and I'm sure this is documented somewhere, but I believe it was the prime reason for moving from PHP to Ruby was for deeper integration with Metasploit and to allow for easier integration with Metasploit, because you will see, we'll talk about it in particular tomorrow, that BEEF has a significant integration with Metasploit to allow you to try to escalate privileges from cross-site scripting to actual client-side exploitation. Now, what the heck does BEEF do? We see this little interface here, and what this interface does is it's your heads-up display. It's your console for being able to control what are referred to perhaps as your zombies. Now, BEEF feels a little bit like a botnet, right? Like a botnet command and control. And what it does is we hook browsers. So we find cross-site scripting payloads. Maybe we find a stored cross-site scripting attack, a stored cross-site scripting vulnerability, and we inject the BEEF hook. The BEEF hook is just a simple little stub payload that when rendered, causes someone's browser to then connect in to the BEEF controller. Okay, so it connects in, and what you'll find is that there's a bunch of AJAX behind the scenes, which we haven't really talked about. We'll talk about in the next section. But there's a bunch of AJAX behind the scenes that makes it so it's constantly checking in, saying, hey, you got any exploits for me? Got any new attacks? So that we can be much more dynamic than a little one-shot payload. So we refer to this as browser hooking, because as long as the browser is on a page where that stub exists, so that AJAX is running, then we can send them stuff. We can make them do things, right? Now, I say I liken it to a botnet because it feels a little bit like that, where you can see multiple systems that have been compromised. You can actually interact with multiple systems. You can send them commands, see the results of those commands. But unlike a botnet, it's pretty easy to get out of. All they have to do is kill their browser, leave the page, and poof, your access is gone. So not a lot of persistence with this. Yeah, their browser crashes. They go home. You have lost your access. So it feels very limited, time-limited access. And that, to me, is one reason for the integration with Metasploit, is because we hook them with the cross-site scripting payload, and then we use this as a vehicle to start attacking them. So we say, hey, I got a new place for you to go. Here, go here. Oh, Oh, that didn't work. Here, try this one. Try this one. Not in a browser autopone, not a chance, right? But just going after and trying to attack them, right? Trying to attack them and using our increased knowledge of their system, right? As you'll see, when you get a hooked browser, you'll know what operating system it is. You'll know what browser it is. You'll likely know whether they support Flash or Java or, right? You'll know a lot about them that's going to increase your likelihood of success with Metasploit. So this beef hook is hook.js, and this is the magic, right? This is what we inject, at least for this instance, right? This is the magic that's going to have them connect, have their browser connect into the controller, and that JS is kicking it with the AJAX. So it's constantly checking in, constantly refreshing to see if there's anything new to do. Okay. So that is not the current one. That's the old. That's the old graphic for beef up there, and I love that one because it scares me. Because that is a creep ass cow, isn't it? Right. And then if you click something that was wrong, it would get angry and it would shake its head at you. It would go like, "Arr!" Right? It's just like, it was a little freaky, right? A little freaky. So now it's all like sleek and metallic and I am now modern, right? Here it was like cartoon cutesy, but kind of creepy at the same time. Huh? But what can beef do? And there are so many different modules. This is not even doing it justice at all. There's tons of different modules. History browsing, why is that at all? Why do we care about browsing someone's history? We want to see their browser history. Why would that matter? Why would this be useful to you? Could be an admin, and this could be a way of assessing whether they are an admin. How would you assess whether they are an admin? Yeah, something that's hit an admin page. Now, unfortunately, it would be totes awesome if this allowed us to see everything that they had been to. It doesn't. The way that we do this is we, and this is kind of cute, right? We put a URL in there, and it will tell us whether they visited that URL or not. The way that it does it is the old school blue turn and purple. You remember that? You'd click a blue link, and then it would be purple. Why was it purple? Because you had been there. You had visited it. So what beef does is it looks to see how you would render this, whether it would be rendered purple or blue, effectively. If it was purple, you've been there. That's a bit lame, isn't it? So just don't tell anybody that that's the way it works, but that's the way it works, right? You have to add in the URLs that you want to check. So, you know, maybe it's add in www.sans.org or add in isc.sans.org. If somebody's visited isc.sans.org, it's a pretty good bet that they're a security professional. I don't know how many people just read the Internet Storm Center for giggles that don't have anything to do with security. Just not likely. So, hey, have you been to Krebs on security? Signs point to security professional, right? Just go away because they might be a little bit more savvy, right? So go after somebody else. Maybe. We hope. But, you know, have they visited, you know, PetriCo, right? Are they a Windows admin? Have they visited, you know, have they visited GitHub, right? They're probably a more technical person if they visited GitHub. That's just a guess, right? Maybe not a definite, but you could have a list of sites. You could also put a list of likely internal locations that are commonly used, right? So common internal paths for CMSs and admin consoles and stuff. You could slap some of those in there, but we have to provide a list. A fun one is the request initiation. This is making it so that the browser actually sends a request. Now, please understand request initiation. This doesn't mean that I'm like doing a little ride along. I don't get to see what they see, but I can make them send a request. Any request I want. I can build out the request and, you know, have them then send it. I don't get to see the results. I don't get to see their vantage point. But this is beautiful when we talk tomorrow about CSERF attacks, right? This is a way of using cross-site scripting to exploit CSERF attacks very, very easily. Okay, so some automated predictable parameter transaction, that'll work well. but again, we don't get to see what they're actually browsing. You can do this, I think it calls it Browser Writer because it integrated the old school. It was a separate framework for cross-site scripting exploitation called Browser Writer. And it was pretty cool. The idea was that I could see what you see. But unfortunately, the Browser Writer functionality is limited to the domain that you have popped, right? So you can only do that. You can only see what they see for stuff that's in the same domain, that's in the same same origin as your script. So it's of limited utility, at least possibly. We can kick off port scanners, and it's a bit of a convoluted way, but we can kick off port scanners, and we can also do distributed port scanning. That doesn't sound at all like something that we would do, but it is possible. Much more important, though, is browser exploitation, or really just honestly client-side exploitation, not necessarily just the browser, right? You could throw them to a Java module that's evil. That's not the browser getting exploited, that's Java or Flash, right? So you've hooked them. You can make them go and initiate a request. You can make them browse wherever you want. So, well, you load up a page, and load up an attack payload. Direct integration with Metasploit, and in day five, I'll give you how to actually integrate it with Metasploit, the commands that you need, and how you set it up to integrate with Metasploit. But once you do, then you'll have this little Metasploit folder that will actually be populated, and it will be populated with exploit payloads. Okay, so then you can use cross-site scripting as a means to upgrade your capabilities to really pop the operating system, which has better persistence, which has much better functionality for you. I mean, cross-site scripting is great, but it's pretty impermanent, right? So your access is very likely fleeting. So there's this other odd technique that Wade has called inter-process exploitation, IPE. I'm sorry, inter-protocol exploitation, IPE. And this is kind of the weirdo edge case, or at least it was. He found that you could initiate just straight HTTP communications, right? You could initiate HTTP with JavaScript pretty easily. And he found that you could, in some circumstances, exploit things that had nothing whatsoever to do with HTTP by sending that layer 7 protocol as the payload of HTTP, which seems really kind of weird. So the use case, the initial proof of concept that he came out with was exploiting an asterisk IP telephony server. So this was an internal server that was only reachable by internal clients, and you'd hook them with your browser, and then you would have it send this server-side exploit payload, I'm sorry, server-side exploit code against this internal IPT. But it had some HTTP at the front. Well, the asterisk server would look at it and say, I don't know what that noise is, so I'll just ignore it and then look at everything that comes afterwards. And suddenly you went from like cross-site scripting to shell on an internal server, which is kind of weird. And he initially kind of posited this and said, hey, look, isn't this curious? I bet there are many other protocols where this might take place. Now go forth, world, and do research to help me populate this. And the world said, dang, Wade, that's cool. Tell us when you got another one, right? And they didn't really, you know, take the mantle and run with it or anything. Kind of an oddity, but we now have better means of sending communication, sending comms using JavaScript for a little bit of tunneling, but still for the most part, HTTP is what we expect. So you've got an exercise where you're going to use beef. You're going to use Firefox and Chrome, because it's kind of weird if you're hooking yourself. You're already hooking yourself, but hooking your own browser and then using the controller in the same browser, it's just weird. So we're going to use Firefox and Chrome. You're going to access the control panel from Firefox, and then you're going to attack Chrome. So Chrome's going to be turned into a zombie that's then controlled by Firefox, which is just kind of funny. So see, look, sleek. That ain't no cutesy little cartoon cow. That thing's scary, right? That's scary in a different way. It's like a robot bull or something. So please make sure you cd into optbeef and then sudo .beef. It will run without sudo, but it just won't work properly, right? So just run it with sudo. And the login, the username and password are beef and beef, which are the defaults. Okay. Now you're going to hook Chrome. So open up Chrome and you'll see the butcher. And I apologize for any vegetarians or vegans. It is a meat-heavy page, so I apologize. We do have some instructors that I just feel bad that that's in there because they are, yeah, sorry, my bads. So Chrome, you hit the butcher, you see your meat page, but that's not the point. The point is, under the hood, there's JavaScript that's running, and it's constantly hooking in, it's constantly checking in, right? So as long as you're on this page, then you are truly well and good hooked. And you're now checked in to the beef controller, okay? So you're in there in the beef controller. Yes, it doesn't identify as Chrome. We just need to update it perhaps. but this is, I will say, I love me some beef, but man, oh man, I'm not a huge fan of their UI design. It's just clunky to me. I just apparently don't think at all like their developers because the workflow and how you navigate it just doesn't, it's non-intuitive for me. So I just want to throw that out there. Make it wider, make it bigger so that you can see everything. Where you're going to go is for your hooked browser, go to current browser commands, and this will show you over here the modules. The colorization gives you an indication as to whether it should work and also whether it is visible. So green, it works, all good. Orange, I believe it might work, but it's likely to be visible, right? I don't remember the difference on the other ones, but it speaks to whether it should work and whether it will be visible. So do make sure you can see the last column over here. You're going to select a module. You're going to, over in this far right pane, you're going to have to execute it, run it, do something with it. And then, and this just seems weird, then you will have to go to the middle pane where your results will be. You highlight them, and then you will see the... What? It just doesn't feel like a workflow that makes sense to me. But hey, I mean, I can't hate because I'm not going to help them fix it, right? I'm just going to say, man, that's cool, but... I'm not a real fan of your UI, okay? But it works. It's just a little off-putting, I think, the first time you use it, just kind of getting a sense of how it flows and how to actually see those results. Just poke around and know that it might not be intuitive, so you might need to look at the instructions, okay? So here we go. There are our commands. Green, it works and it should be invisible. Orange, it works, but it may be invisible. White, I don't know. Red, it don't work, right? So that's the... That's the indication. That's what those different things mean. all right. So here are your challenges. You need to pop up an alert box. Okay. You need to pop up a prompt dialog that's going to allow them to submit something. You can play a sound. And if you have your volume turned on speakers, you could potentially hear it. You need to redirect the browser. So redirect the browser somewhere else. And then finally, deface the page. Okay. Do note that because of the nature of this, it could take a little bit. There could be a lag from you getting commands to execute and you seeing whether the command has executed and the results, because it's got to wait for the XML HTTP request and for it to finish and realize that the ready state has updated, and then it's got to check in and send data back to you. So there could be a little bit of delay there. So just a heads up. All right, so you can attempt them on your own, no hints, or you can turn the page for the step-by-step walkthrough.